welcome. It is the World Soccer Talk podcast. That's right, the best podcast west of the Mississippi. And you can subscribe to it via Stitcher, TuneIn, and iTunes. And you can also go to Twitter at World Soccer Talk, hashtag WST Pod. I am your host, Nick Webster. You can also reach me on Twitter, which I sometimes go to warble on just wisely and intellectually, at Nick Webster. I'm joined by the three-man crew. We are a menage a trois today of Kartik Karishnaya, Nikki Hollander, and Nate Aburea. Boys, thank you so much for joining us on this wonderful, kind of rainy Sunday morning here in good old Los Angeles. And let's get to the rain straight away. Southampton versus Liverpool. The game has just finished, and I'm fairly outraged. Meanwhile, Nate Aburea has sprayed his shorts and can't stop whispering the words, "Continue." Kevin Friend, no friend of the Southampton fans on this particular day. I've been getting a lot of stick from Liverpool fans saying that my hatred of them is completely unnecessary and they're no longer going to listen to the show unless I say I love Liverpool. So, just for you fans out there, I do. I love Liverpool. You play some great football. However, on this particular day, Southampton wiped the floor with you. I'm not going to start with Nate because he's way too smug. He's drinking champagne. He's got a big hangover from the Reading Beer Festival. But I will start with Kartik Karishnaya. And let's talk about this referee, Mr. Kevin Friend, who had what I'd have to say was an absolute rascal. Where do we start with his non-penalty appeals?
What a shocker from Kevin Friend. It's been a bad season for Premier League officials, Nick. Great to be back with you this week, by the way. I don't know where to start. Do we start in the fourth minute? Maybe we start giving numbers like Jose Mourinho did. Maybe this is what Ronald Koeman should do in his press conference, because there were four clear incidents in the first half. Now, some were more marginal than others. The most obvious one was Mignolet coming out of the area. That's not a penalty. That's a free kick, but he should have been sent off. Elias broken away one-on-one, tries to chip him, probably scores if Mignolet doesn't use his hand, and that's a sending off down to 10 men. There was a penalty shout less than a minute later, I think right after that incident. Four clear incidents in the first half. A shocking performance from Kevin Friend. It seems Southampton has gotten far from the rub of the green in these sorts of matches against other top sides they're competing with. I recall the game against Manchester United at St. Mary's. There were some controversial calls. They lost that match. Of course, they went to Old Trafford and beat them later in the season. But they've had some matches where they've had a hard time with the officials, in which it's going to make it all the more difficult. I mean, it's already such a story, Southampton being in this position to finish in the top four, not getting the calls in the big games.
The small clubs never get the calls, but a massive result for Liverpool, who are now unbeaten in 10, just 2 points off fourth place, just 1 point behind Southampton in fifth. As we like to say, Nate Aburea, we don't like to talk about the officials, we like to talk about the players. So I'll let you talk about Coutinho for about 10 seconds, and that should be enough time for you to have deposited whatever it is you're about to do.
Oh my goodness. I mean, you're talking goal of the season. You're talking goal of the season from someone who is as in form as any player in the entire league right now. In terms of pure individual form, this guy is at the peak of his career, and it's on an upward trend, and that's all there is to it. And there's your 10 seconds. I mean, and take Jordan Ibe over out on the right flank for this team, and the peaking that he's going on right now, and the new contract. I mean, Jordan Ibe was outstanding today. And so you're talking young players in an energetic, rejuvenated squad that I say peaking, but there's still so much more upward trend to happen for so many of these guys. Raheem Sterling with a goal, with the second goal in this match. So I'm extremely intrigued to see where this train keeps on rolling to, because with the looks of it, it's got plenty of momentum behind it, and this is something that was laughable to so many people as little as 2 months ago. And you go back to Martin Skrtel's goal against Arsenal in the 97th minute, at Anfield on December 22nd. And that's a goal that Nick, you kind of mocked and laughed at when they scored. Are we really celebrating this home draw against Arsenal in a game where we were absolutely dominated? And yeah, they did. And since then, you look at where they've gone, and I think it all started with that goal from Skrtel. And to real quickly address Cardick's point about Koeman, if he were to go to the Jose Mourinho school of interviewing, he would say 1, 4, 41, 43. Those would be the four lottery numbers that Mr. Koeman would have read. And so I want to know, is the Dutchman going to say that there's a campaign against Southampton from the Premier League, or is he just going to say it wasn't our day and the referee was against us? Because Jose maybe should watch this match and go, oh, victimization complex. It's not just Chelsea that gets FU, you know what-ed every now and again in this league.
Listen, Nate, Koeman has got way too much class. Liverpool are coming into form at the right time, but I would disagree with you about the Martin Skrtel. I believe that Liverpool's season has changed the moment Brad Jones got injured and Mignolet had to go back in goal. That has been the difference.
Absolutely, and it was all, I mean, we joke about this.
And Brendan Rodgers, the luckiest bastard manager alive, because if Jones hadn't got injured, Liverpool would still be in the toilet.
I'm not gonna argue with you on that, and it was so fortunate for Mignolet's career because he was in the toilet individually in so many ways, and when that happened, call it fortuitous, but the way that whole thing evolved is hilarious because he's back into pretty darn good form today. And you talk about good form when you got luck on your side. He was lucky to not get sent off in this match. He probably should have been sent off. So you talk about the soccer gods shining down brightly on the Belgian in goal. How's that,
Nicky?
I got to disagree. Listen, their season just changed because they kept faith in Brendan Rodgers and the philosophy of how he plays, and eventually it will come together. You'll get in a run of form, confidence will come, and that's just how it works. Look, just as easily in, you know, two games' time, Liverpool could lose to Man City and somebody else and lose confidence. You can't have these massive highs and lows. You kind of got to believe in the manager and what he's saying and then kind of like ride, because it's never going to be smooth sailing because you've got great teams in the Premier League. I think, look, Liverpool have got great players. All right, so they got lucky today, you know, and Southampton got unlucky. But next week, the complete opposite could happen, and these things even themselves out over the season. I think everybody going for the, you know, for third and fourth place are very evenly, you know, matched. I think it just swings on very small incidents, and I think, you know, you kind of just live by it and you just say, look, if we lose a game like that, you don't get on at your manager. And if we win a game like that, you don't get too high. You just kind of go, that's football.
Well, it was very reminiscent of Liverpool in the 70s to go on the road, not play particularly well, and then mug an opponent and walk off with all the points. And that's probably why I'm not the biggest Liverpool fan. But you're talking about managers and sticking with managers, and Liverpool have obviously done a great job doing that with Brendan Rodgers. Elsewhere on Merseyside, there's a lot of rumbling going on right now about Roberto Martinez, and it was only last season that he was everybody's favourite topping. I mean, they couldn't get enough Roberto Martinez. Now, after basically nicking all 3 points off of Leicester, who only get a point when they desperately needed three, Everton are really struggling in the Premiership. They haven't won in God knows how long. They're flying along, though, in the Europa League after a massive midweek win. But how long can Everton keep the faith with Martinez if they keep falling down the table? And remember, this is an Everton team that we were praising to the heavens last year for their adventurous football, their lovely brand. Not so much anymore. And the knock is that Martinez is unable to motivate his players, Kartik. Is there anything in this, or should we just say Martinez is doing a great job because he's putting all his eggs in the Europa League and everyone's going to shut the F up when Everton are playing in the Champions League next year?
Nate has been saying all along that Martinez was pushing Europa League. I think we kind of got the sense from the beginning of the season that Europe was a priority for them, and they know that finishing the top four in the Premier League on their budget is always unlikely. David Moyes came close a couple of times. I think they finished fifth. They finished fourth 1 year. We remember what happened that year. But they finished fifth a couple times after that, but never made the Champions League. Fifth last season, didn't make it. But I have a concern about the squad depth and the squad rotation or lack of squad rotation when you've got this Thursday-Sunday thing. Nicky, as a Spurs fan, can speak to the difficulty of Europa League or UEFA Cup before that and then Premier League match days back-to-back. That Thursday-Sunday thing is awful. I know fans of Champions League clubs say, well, sometimes we have to go Wednesday-Saturday. It's not the same thing because when you have to travel from Eastern Europe, let's say, after a match on a Thursday night, it completely throws off your preparation for the weekend, your training routine, everything. It's very, very different than playing in Champions League on a Tuesday or Wednesday. Obviously, you lose as many
Kartik,
days. But
I'm sorry, I've got to interrupt for a second. We're talking about players that are incredibly fit, paid £100,000 a week. Oh, it upsets them that they got to play football on Thursday night and come home on Friday.
Well, I don't think he's saying that they're upset, Nick. I think what he's saying is that, listen, they're playing against other really good professionals who are also on a lot of money. And a very small difference in your preparation can mean the difference between having a very seamless kind of, you know, very cohesive performance to one that's, you know, maybe fits and starts. And that's enough to drop points in the Premier League.
Well, we're talking about Everton in the Europa League, and let's make it clear that they haven't been playing in the Europa League for the past 2 months when they've been god-awful in domestic competition, especially in the Premier League itself. So the Europa League has not been an issue during this horrendous run of form. So, I mean, I understand the point that Cardick's making. It's spot on, but they've been crap with no Europe interference over the last couple of months.
I would just say, though, if anyone who is kind of getting on at Liverpool, I mean, getting on at Everton, should just look at Liverpool and how they turned it around. You know, be careful what you wish for, because, you know, quite easily Everton could go on a run of 4 or 5 wins and turn this around. So you either have faith in that manager and the philosophy or not. But this, you know, chopping and changing. Martinez, we all know he's a great manager. Look at Klopp over in Germany. Like, you know, they have faith in him and now they're starting to climb their way up the table. And you go through periods like this in football. It's just, you know, it can happen, and you either believe in that guy and you say, look, this is a bad period, or no, I've completely lost faith in his ability and his philosophy. But for me, Martinez, I wouldn't, he's a great manager.
I'm going to ask Kartik this. Kartik, I've got this feeling that Everton are going to go on an incredible run in the wrong direction.
You think they're going to go on a losing run? Wow.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So they'll get sucked into – you're saying they're going to get sucked into the relegation fight because they're only a few points off the drop zone now, I think. They're 5 or 6 points off. Wow. I don't think they're going to go on a terrible run, but – of course, the longer they go in Europe, and I take Nate's point, what I was trying to say, Nicky articulated much better than I did, which is the preparation, the disruption to your training schedule. But if they do go on that negative run, the jury's out on Martinez. Although he has gotten his teams through relegation fights before. I know Wigan finally went down that final season, but the previous two seasons, by all means, Wigan should have gone down. If you looked at the squad they had, the kind of budget that Martinez had, but he kept them in the Premier League. So I still have a lot of faith in him as a manager, and I agree with Nicky. You keep your faith in managers. You stick with managers. Unless you can get an Alan Pardew like Palace was able to do, or a Tony Pulis like West Brom was able to do, you stick with your manager through these rough spots, and you'll come out the other side.
But the similarities between his last season at Wigan and Everton are very stark when he put all his eggs in the FA Cup.
That's correct.
And they went down. I mean, and it seems to me that he's doing the same with the Europa League, and the Europa League's a lot harder to win than the FA Cup.
Right, that is correct. That is a good point, Nick. And that parallel is kind of ominous for Everton supporters, isn't it?
It certainly is. All right, let's go to Nicky Hollander then. Jammy bastard, that's what I'm going to call you. White Hart Lane, the venue. Plenty on hand to see a very tasty London derby. Coete in the 22nd minute. Sacco in the 62nd minute. Robin Burt was in dreamland. But back comes Danny Rose and then Harry Kane scuffs one in. from a rebound from the penalty. What do you make of this performance? Are you gonna blame the Europa League as well?
Well, not blame it, because I'm overjoyed. But I thought we played the first 20 minutes really well. I thought we played the last half an hour really well. I thought, yes, you know, it's a little bit difficult because, you know, cohesiveness comes from that kind of playing, you know, with the same players. And so when you're having to kind of take Harry Kane off in the last game and then bring him on, start Dembele in this game, kind of bring Ryan Mason back in, it kind of just shuffles the pack a bit. And that small gap, you can lose a bit of cohesiveness somewhere along the line. And Spurs started great. In the middle, they lost their way. West Ham did really good. They put a lot of pressure on Spurs. After they got the goal, they were working really hard. And, you know, most teams now, when they play Spurs, are working hard to destroy Spurs as a team, which is West Ham did really well. The second goal for West Ham, I feel, was offside, because even though the guy didn't touch it, you know, Danny Rose has seen him two yards offside with the ball going right at his head. You know, I would have given that offside myself. But, you know, they score, and most Spurs teams go, that's it, they're done. They kind of mail it in the last, like, 25 minutes. But this Spurs team keeps going and going and going. And they played some really nice football in the last 25 minutes, and I had this belief that they were going to score. And that is so unusual with Spurs. And they kept going, and they have a young side, and I'm so amazingly optimistic. Now, I think it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be between Liverpool, Spurs, and Man United for that fourth place. I think Arsenal will get third. But all of those teams, you could throw a coin down, and they'll all be within a point. I think they're all going to have their good days. And, you know, days when they play well and they win, and maybe like Liverpool, you know, today where they don't play so great and they get a little lucky, and Spurs get a little lucky, it's going to go down to the wire. But I've got no complaints. I think Spurs showed fighting spirit. And if you want to get anywhere in this game, top four, win the league, you've got to have that spirit. I'm telling you right now, Spurs are building the class of 92 team from Man United, and they are coming through with some amazing young players. Wow, very blimey. Optimistic.
Nicky, really, you've got to start going to bed a bit earlier, maybe eating some meat. Kartik, mystery penalty for Kane. I mean, do you think it was legit? I mean, obviously, Son got involved, but I mean...
Son got involved, but I think he hammed up the contact a little bit, and it's one of those calls that any other point in the match I think you see called as a penalty, but in the sixth minute of stoppage time in this London derby, we know the bad blood between the ownership of these two clubs. Also, it's a tough call for Hammers. It's a tough call for Sam Allardyce, but maybe it's you're supposed to officiate the entire match consistently, yeah. And I guess that's a penalty.
Definitely feel that he clipped the back of his heels. If you look at Alex Song, number one, Alex Song goes down two, which is one indication that he did catch the back of Harry Kane's ankle. He throws his hands up and he doesn't complain. If you look at Alex Song, he just puts his hands in the head and he doesn't complain. And as a player, as an ex-player, that is a very big indication of like...
Nicky, he doesn't complain, because before the game, I saw him down at William Hill putting 200 quid on the 2-2 scoreline.
Oh, cynical, Mr.
No, talk about cynical. So, you know what, Nicky, I love your belief. I love your passion and your true belief in this new crop of Spurs here this season. Well, I'm watching Match of the Day right now, and I get a nice little replay of about 4,000 of you Tottenham lot walking out of White Hart Lane in the 92nd minute with no belief, with absolutely no belief in this passionate young team. So why don't you share with the rest of your fellow supporters over there that maybe they should stay till the end with cardiac kid group, dare I call them.
Yeah, totally. Well, I would say, you know, hopefully those fans are getting less and less, because the crowd didn't turn against Spurs when they were 2-0 down, which is kind of unusual.
Out time.
You know, and it was like they were still backing him. And I think they're understanding that Spurs are really kind of, if they're going down, it's not through lack of effort. And I think they've come back late enough times where Spurs are going, look, let's just back them. Let's go for it. And yeah, I saw some fans walking out at the end of that game. And I was like,
hey, you need a chance. Lock them in. Lock them in.
Yeah,
lock them in. Right, Nikki,
still the most entitled supporters in all of the land.
Nikki, before we let you go on Tottenham, because the show will be after the League Cup final, give us your thoughts quickly on Tottenham-Chelsea next weekend. It's for the first piece of silverware of the season. Obviously, Chelsea losing Matic, which is absolutely massive. We'll talk about that shortly. But just your thoughts on this Tottenham-Chelsea game at Wembley. Leaving bias aside, who wins?
Well, I would like you to know, guys, that I am going to that game. I am flying in on Saturday morning, doing some work for Spurs TV and a little NBC. So I managed to get it all in the budget. And I'm going to be at that game. And I think that Spurs can beat Chelsea. Now, if I was going to lay money, I would put favourites as Chelsea. But Spurs have a group of young players who are going to play with no fear. They're going to, one, realise they can beat Chelsea. I think they, and that belief and that confidence is huge, is really massive. I think as a team, as that unity, they play in such a way that they play with freedom and no fear, which is given to them by Pochettino. I think his squad rotation has been great. I think against Fiorentina, he's going to rotate again. You can even see Roberto Soldado is starting to get confidence because, you know, he's like, all right, you know, I'm not just out of here. Like, he's actually going to back me.
Nate, I'm so glad I asked Nicky not to be biased.
Give a prediction, for God's sakes.
I'm so glad I asked him to be biased.
Here's my prediction. Spurs are going to win 3-1. I think they're going to be leading 2-1 with about 3 or 4 minutes left. Mourinho's going to go in, shake hands, and just after he shakes hands, Spurs will score the third goal. Game, set, match.
Oh, dear. Kartik, please give us some realism, please.
I certainly hope Spurs win, but I think these are the big occasions where Mourinho's teams tend to shine. And although they won't have Matic, that's a pretty big deal. Actually, Chelsea are a very different team when Matic or Fabregas are out of the team, but they'll probably still nick it in the end. I'll say 2-1. It'll be a spirited Spurs effort, and the young core, as Nikki says, will play up. But Chelsea, maybe they'll get a fortuitous call because Mourinho's whining about officials so much.
What about you, Mr. Aborea?
Nikki, 2-1 to Tottenham.
Come on, you Spurs!
Yes.
Obviously, Nate is still feeling the effects of all the craft beers he was necking
yesterday.
No,
I told you about the our idea for the Tot Pool party. We encourage positive football in England, and Liverpool and Tottenham are all about it. So you should be for both of those clubs if you're a neutral here for the remainder of this season.
I am a neutral, and I would prefer Tottenham to win playing their expensive brand of football. But like Kartik, I'm a bit of a realist, and when it comes to winning silverware, there's very few better at it than a certain Mr. Jose Mourinho. He will put Tottenham in the grinder. Chelsea 3-0. Diego Costa with a couple. Talking of Chelsea, sorry, Nikki. 41,629 on hand to watch the latest blubbering from Jose Mourinho as Burnley went to the bridge and got a deserved point in my book. Ivanovic in the 14th minute, me in the 81st minute, but all the talking points were about Jose Mourinho's post-match conference where basically, the special one lost his mind. Now, what do we make of this? Today he went on to Sky and called Barnes a criminal for his challenge on Matic. A criminal, that seems a little heavy-handed. I can't remember the minutes. What are the minutes we have?
The minutes we have 30, 33, 43. And 69. I repeat, 30, 33, 43, and 69.
So let's go through these minute by minute. Kartik, let's start with you. Minute 30, I believe, was the first penalty decision that didn't go Mourinho's way. What do you make of it?
It was probably the wrong decision. Was Martin Atkinson the official in this game? I think he was. What difference does it make? Mourinho doesn't like any official. But Atkinson has had some... he's had some controversy with Mourinho before. Yeah, I think that was probably the wrong decision. However, You know, I'm struck because we're talking about Liverpool getting officiating decisions today. Don't forget when Liverpool played Chelsea at Anfield earlier in the season, Chelsea essentially stole 3 points in that match. So it's funny how Mourinho's not consistent. But a minute 30, I'll give him. Okay, that should have been a penalty.
Okay, minute 33.
Oh, no, not a penalty. Sorry, that should have been it wasn't a penalty. It was a foul by Barnes and Botic. Yeah.
So let's go to you, Nicky. Minute 33, Michael Knightley blocking an Ivanovic shot with his arm in the box. The referee, Mr. Atkinson, didn't consider it deliberate handball. Your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, again, probably, I don't know if it was deliberate. He had his hand away from the body. I mean, you can give it. I put no weight on this conspiracy theory. I think most things conspire for Chelsea, not against Chelsea. I would say, you know, you get to spend the most money. You probably got a few things in your pocket. Don't you know, accept the good with the bad. They even themselves out of this over the season. But yeah, could have been called a penalty, but you know, it wasn't.
Minute 43, Diego Costa falling in the box. That's something that happens very rarely under pressure from Jason Shackle. Nate.
You know what's funny? Of all the four, this is the one that I actually was like, this one I don't think belonged in the category of 30, 33, and 69. And 69 was indeed divine. I mean, you're making light of what was very much a potentially leg-breaking challenge and something that was absolute filth. And this is where Matic's reaction in the 69th minute and just running and wanting to just tackle and just absolutely pummel his opponent who just offered him a potentially leg-breaking challenge was a result of Atkinson not being in proper form as a referee and was a result of a player feeling that, wow, no one's going to protect me, then I'm going to lose my mind and I want to go tackle someone and I want to go beat them up when they're on the ground. And so I feel for Matic. He was absolutely hard done. Chelsea were hard done. And you know what? So it goes in modern football. Well, there is no conspiracy theory.
Nicky, hang on, Nicky. Yeah. I want to say something first, right? Because you've played and I've played at a decent level as well. Right, so Barnes has gone in and he's gone in to win the ball. He's won the ball and then he's gone on to Matic's shin. I say that he hasn't gone through with the act. I think he's gone through the ball and thought, I'm going to do him. And then he's changed his mind at the last second, but his foot's already there. Because I'm telling you this, if he'd gone through Matic with the same intent that he went through the tackle, he would have busted his leg.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, look, I understand Matic getting angry. But, you know, it could just be that Matic didn't fancy playing against Christian Eriksen next week. That's what I think.
Oh, God.
He's so smart, Matic. He went, no, I don't want next Sunday. I need to take a holiday. And that's what he did.
Talk to me about the challenge. Come on, Nicky. The challenge from Barnes, right? I'm saying that Barnes changed his mind.
Yeah, he did. He could have killed him. He could have cut his leg off.
So why aren't we giving Barnes any credit for pulling it back just at the moment where he could have said, you know what, I'm really going to do him? Because think about this, right? From a momentum point of view, Nicky, he's gone in to win the ball, right? Yeah. He's won the ball cleanly. If he'd kept the momentum going and gone through on Matic's leg, no one would have been saying anything. It would have just been like his momentum took him through. But the fact that when he won the ball, he kind of pulled it back a little bit and then left his foot on the shin, everyone's going, oh, he's meant to do him.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I think he could have absolutely killed him, gone through him. But, you know, like, yeah, I don't think there was intent to hurt. I think there was intent at the beginning, and then he tried to kind of, like you say, he tried to kind of pull back out of it. Again, you could say the foot was on the shin, excessive force still, but, you know, again, it's no conspiracy theory. These things go one way, then they go the other. It just happens.
Kartik, let's finish with you on this Matic and Barnes challenge because, you know, you're quite the studious chap. You've probably looked at it from 3,000 different angles. your particular thoughts on this because, you know, I believe that, yeah, Barnes should have probably got a yellow card, but, you know, possibly a red. But I still feel like he was hard done by in as much as that he could have broken Matic's leg and got away with it rather than the vitriol that's been heaped on him now because he decided not to do it.
I completely agree with Nick. I was going to make that same point, Nick, that you made. His leg is high. He went into the challenge, but at a certain point, he realized, if I go through with this challenge, I'm getting sent off. I could break this guy's leg. That could be a leg shatterer. We saw a couple seasons ago Balotelli do the same thing to Bakary Sagna in an Arsenal-Man City game and go right through him. The leg was high. I know now FIFA has legislated that their officials give red cards, send guys off in that situation. But in this case, we should be praising the player, Ashley Barnes, for the restraint. Yes, the challenge in minute 30 we talked about, so he would have already been on a yellow if that had been properly officiated. But he actually realized he was putting Matic in danger, and I think just kind of stuck his leg out there after he had begun the action and didn't go through with the challenge as forcefully as he could have. And for that reason, Matic did not get injured and was able to come in charge him after. So I actually agree with you, Nick, on this.
Fabulous. Finally. First time this year. So Chelsea drop massive points, making City very happy as they demolished Newcastle. Burnley, meanwhile, seem to go from strength to strength. And let's quickly get a quick temperature gauge of where we think Burnley are going to be. Statman, the long-departed Statman, he can't come on the show anymore, by the way.
Wanker.
Fox, they get too upset with our boss Christopher Harris for his inflammatory articles about the Fox Soccer Channel, which, in fact, I don't find inflammatory. I think they're perfectly true. But Statman said Burnley were going to survive. Nate, do you still think that's the case?
Yes, I also said that Burnley were going to survive, and you mock this one all the time. You always mock these very emotional team spirit mindsets, and what Burnley have right now is this attitude of that if everyone from the last supporter, from the 90-year-old man who once stood on the terraces of Turf Moor to the tiny little 5-year-old child and everyone in between, if all of those fans and every player and every assistant coach, if everyone comes together as one family, that they can survive. And a point like this, dare I say it, is very emblematic of such a mindset. And I think very much says that they do have the, hey, it's either we're all together or we're going back down to the championship. And I have this nagging suspicion that with 12 matches left, they're even with QPR right now on points. QPR with the goal difference, the critical goal difference. Obviously, if it were to end now, Burnley would go down. But I still have QPR going down. And I got Burnley staying up because I think they are a true family and they are all together. And I love it and I hope they stay up.
Nicky, yes or no? Down or up?
I think they're going to stay up. Yes.
All right. And Kartik?
It's a consensus. They're staying up. I've said it all season. I like Vokes and now Ings. Vokes is back. I love Danny Ings. George Boyd has been a good player for them. They can score goals, and the other teams near the bottom have problems scoring goals.
Okay. So talking of team having problems scoring goals and in that relegation zone, Aston Villa, 31,880 for the visit of Stoke. Sinclair opens up the scoring for the Villains. Diouf just before halftime, and then Victor Moses from the penalty spot with the last kick of the game. Dooms Timmy Sherwood to his opening defeat as official Villa manager. Yes, he was on the sidelines during the FA Cup, but he was certainly on the bench this weekend. And the interesting thing about Sherwood, and we'll start off with Nicky before we talk about Villa, because we have to go back to the Tottenham thing, is Sherwood comes out in the midweek and just basically says that Tottenham are great because of me.
Well, here's the thing. It's hard for me to say a bad word against Tim Sherwood because he's a
Because he's your mate.
Yeah, well, not just that, but I actually think...
Close personal friend, yeah.
I think he's actually a very smart guy. I think that I don't think he's as good a coach as Pochettino, and I think that Pochettino is the real reason Spurs has success, because whether Tim Sherwood had faith in Bentaleb, which he did, because he coached the under-21s at Spurs, he didn't show faith in Ryan Mason, and he didn't show that much faith in Harry Kane, but he brought one or two through. So I feel that what Tim Sherwood is saying is, I kind of was given that same thing. But I think what Pochettino had done is he's done it in a more cohesive philosophy. Instead of the good thing for Aston Villa is that Tim Sherwood is a pragmatic coach. So when you're in a relegation zone and only have 13 games left, you don't need a manager with philosophy, because it's going to take too long to bed that in, and you're going to be in the championship before that happens. So you need a guy that can come in and go, all right, this is where we're lacking, kind of in the middle. We need a bit of strength here. We need maybe one striker, maybe put five in midfield, get more ball retention, and kind of fit that team together and figure out how to get 13 good results rather than how you're going to get results in a year or 2 years' time. That's the difference between, I think, a manager like Tim Sherwood and Pochettino. But they both trust in youth, and I think they're both very inspirational figures. Pochettino maybe a little more so. But no, I don't agree with Tim Sherwood that he laid the foundation to Spurs' success. I put that all at Pochettino.
Well, Carter, I thought you were going to put it all on yourself. I thought you laid the foundation with all those fantastic training sessions out
there. Close personal friend. Yes, Kartik, for Villa, their fixture's really interesting because you'd think that Sherwood could get some results. They go to Newcastle. Then they've got a tasty Midlands derby against West Brom. Then they've got a tasty Midlands derby against West Brom in the Cup. So they play each other twice in the space of 4 days before going to Sunderland and then Swansea City. And this feels like a five-game span where Sherwood could really stamp his authority on the team and get five wins, put Villa into the semi-final of the FA Cup, get them out of the relegation zone. And if he really is as good as he thinks he is, this would be the time to do it.
This would be, and if you remember when he got to Spurs, well, he was at Spurs as the U21 coach, as Nikki points out. When he took that job over from AVB, he got a run of results pretty quickly. He lost in the League Cup to West Ham, I remember, but then won at Old Trafford, which is a high watermark for Spurs, always a great victory. And then they were scoring goals. They had been scoring essentially a goal a game in much of the last few months under AVB, and getting beaten 4-0, 5-0 in some matches against bigger sides, Liverpool, Man City, those types of games. He had instant success. The results began to go bad for Sherwood towards the end of last season. That doesn't matter for Villa. If they get the few results he got at Spurs, the few spectacular results, they'll be fine. And seeing Newcastle on that fixture list and Sunderland make me think that he can get those results. West Brom is always a tasty derby, local derby. That could go either way. But those other two matches, he could target 4 points out of those two matches. I think that gets them back on the right track. There's just a lack of belief right now at Villa. So Sherwood is the right guy to bring in. He's kind of the anti-Paul Lambert, if you will. And that's what this dressing room needs, a good little kick in the butt.
Meanwhile, Stoke City, ho-hum. In 10th place, shock, horror. 36 points, no chance of relegation. 36 points, no chance of Europe. If you're a fan of Stoke City, Nate, where do you find the glimmers of hope? Because it can't always be about being mid-table, can it?
Well, if I'm a fan of Stoke,
by the way, Stoke City out of the FA Cup, Kartik.
Right. Oh, yes.
Yeah, Kartik. Yeah, because of Boyan's injury.
Yeah, what do you know, Kartik? Bloody hell. Anyway, go on, Nate.
if I'm a fan of Stoke, I am a hard-nosed, gritty human being to begin with. I'm tough. I don't give a rat's ass about what anyone thinks about me. I am a true middle-of-the-road human being. So how fitting is it that they're a perennial 10th place finisher in the English Premier League? That's how I view them, and that's how they're forever going to be. I don't see them ever do. I see them staying right where they are for years to come. And all of you Stoke residents out there that were just labeled as middle of the road human beings, I ask you this.
Don't apologize.
I was going to ask you this. Are you offended by that statement? You know, I really don't think you are. I think you're perennial middle of the road finishers in life and in the Premier League.
And let's wait for the Brit to go through your window before we answer that.
And if so, they can tweet you where, Nate?
At Nate WST. Now we have professionalized the Twitter sphere.
Oh,
what right.
A complete and utter sellout!
WST. WST is in World Soccer Talk. That's right.
I won't tell you about our conversation beforehand, but sellout really comes to mind.
Don't share that conversation.
I am not. I would just like to say though that you know, Carter, Stoke City for the FA Cup. My pick, meanwhile, Manchester United still in it. Nate's pick, Liverpool still in it. And what was yours, Nicky? I've forgotten. Tottenham. They lost to Leicester. Selhurst Park.
No, I think mine was Liverpool. I think mine was Liverpool for the FA Cup.
Okay, well, all right. Well, you're still in, just by the hair of your chinny chin chin. 24,721.
Nick, what do you got, Bradford City?
No, I went with United.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Selhurst Park, Arsenal versus Crystal Palace. We'll get to Crystal Palace in a second, but we've got to talk about this Arsenal team that, dare I say it, looks like coming into form at the right time. Players coming back from injury at the right time. This is very unlike Arsenal. Usually they're going in the opposite direction. They've now moved up to third place. Cazorla, who I've got to get on my fantasy team because he keeps on scoring from the spot, and Oliver Giroud giving the Gunners the 2-0 lead. Murray getting one back deep into the end of the game for Palace. Wasn't going to be enough as Arsenal looking very, very strong. Nicky, Arsenal right now seem to have momentum on their side, and as I just mentioned, players coming back from injury. They are the holders of the FA Cup, or yes, they have a very tasty draw against United. They have Champions League this week against Monaco. Arsenal, are they on the verge of doing something that we haven't seen in quite some time, and that is be successful in February and March?
Well, I think for Arsenal, it's going to be the games around the Champions League. So when they're starting to play their games against Monaco and then playing on the weekend, I think that's when you're going to see. I think Arsenal are playing great. I think they're looking great. I think that they're coming into form at a time when they usually struggle. I would give it, before you get too excited, I would give it maybe one more week. Give it about 10 more days. If they're holding it through the Monaco game and their next league game, I will start to get very excited about their chances of, you know, definitely maybe being quite a clear third. If you know, but again, it's a very fragile league. You lose one and suddenly the pressure's on and you can lose two. But give it 10 days and I'd say get excited.
Well, Kartik, if we look at the next 10 days for the Gunners, it's Monaco at home, it's Everton at home, it's QPR away, which is basically another home game. So they're not actually stepping outside of London for the next 10 games. And then it's United in the Cup before another home game against West Ham United. So not a lot of travel coming up for the Gooners.
No, and this is an opportunity for them to solidify third or top fourth place and to advance in Champions League. We know they've been eliminated at the round of 16 now. I'm trying to think in my mind, four, five straight campaigns. I think it's four. They should get by Monaco. And a chance to put some distance between themselves and those other teams in the scrap for fourth, Liverpool, Southampton, United, and Spurs. Now, Arsenal being Arsenal, you just never know. The results have become less predictable as time goes on. We kind of know Wenger will finish in the top four. They will probably finish third, but maybe they'll slip up in one of these matches.
Palace 5 points above the drop zone. The effect of Mr. Alan Pardew seems to have worn off. Only one win in their last five. Do they need to be concerned, Nate? That trapdoor is looming very large. Their next few games, definitely playing teams around them. They've got QPR. They've got a couple of tricky ones against the likes of City and West Ham.
It's disheartening, I'd say, based on this amazing potential that everyone saw once Pardew came in and those first couple of matches and the emotion behind it. But no, I think they're just fine. Mind you, we're talking about Everton being so close to the drop and they're 1 point above Palace right now. Palace 5 points off of that 22 number after 26 matches played. But no, I'm not worried about them going down. I think they're absolutely I'm saying for sure we'll stay up. I had them pegged to potentially finish in the top half. Maybe I sound like a bit of a fool after that one. Kartik shot me down about a month ago, and so it's looking more like 14th, 13th, 15th, somewhere in there. Just to end real quickly on Arsenal in this match, I mean, the victimization complex of Jose Mourinho, I got to go back to one more time because you talk about how luck will just rotate from club to club. The penalty claims that Southampton and Chelsea had in their games, and then you look at Tottenham and Arsenal with three collective penalties between those two sides, and so it'll be Chelsea and Southampton getting luck on their side in 1 week's time. But Arsenal, not to say that either of these calls were horrendous by any means. The one against Welbeck may have been a half yard outside the box when the foul was called. But Arsenal, with, you know, talking about luck on your side, you win a match 2-1, you get two penalties.
A lot of the newspapers in their match reports saying about Palace, short of ideas. Nicky Hollander, I don't take it personally, but why am I going to you? Short of ideas, what does that mean?
Well, I think it's, like I say, remember, Alan Pardew's just got there. So you're going to have, at the beginning, you're going to have a guy that pragmatically can figure out ways to get results. And that's what he did. And I think then when teams start to play you, a bit tougher, because suddenly you're getting these results and they start to maybe sit a bit deeper and they start to worry about some of your players, then you need that more kind of a philosophy of how to break a team down. And I think maybe that's what's happening. And you've got to give Pardew probably the off-season to really kind of get that into his team. At the moment, he's playing with cards that he didn't really pick, and he's kind of just figuring out the best ways to grind out results. They could be short of ideas, and I just wouldn't judge Pardew until next season.
Something I've never been accused of, Nicky. Short of ideas. I love it.
No, you're just short.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. The Kingston Communications Stadium, 24,466. Hull City, QPR, a massive relegation six-pointer. Jelovic in the 16th. Charlie Austin in the 39th. Dioi in the 89th with the winner. But the talking point, you got to love him, haven't you? Young Mr. Joseph Barton. I mean, is this geezer completely out of his noodle or what? The incident reminded me that, by the way, he got a red card. The incident reminded me of actually Vinnie Jones and Paul Gascoigne. The only difference this time. You know what? The best part about this whole conversation is because it's going to go to Nicky. Do you know why? Because he's personally well acquainted with Tom Huddleston's private parts, right? Joey Barn, I think there was a grab, there was a block, and then there was a punch to Tom Huddlestone's nuts.
It was a tap. It was a tap. It was
a
nice
little two-finger
tap. Come
on, it was a swing.
No, you need to watch Eddie Murphy's Raw. Eddie Murphy has a great take back in the early glory days of his stand-up comedy about how it's actually far more painful for a man to get lightly sack-tapped in those little parts right there than it actually is to get punched. Joey is a crafty, crafty villain. He knew exactly what he was doing. A sack-tap, far more painful than a sack punch, believe it or not.
This is the best part. Let me just say what Joey has to say, all right? And then we'll get to you, Nicky, because I'm sure you've tweeted with Tommy to see how his twig and berries are doing. I've apologized to the lads, and I would like to apologize to all QPR fans who traveled today, tweeted Barton. I'm gutted I got sent off. I've let my teammates down today, and being someone who puts the team above everything else, I'm gutted about that. My actions toward Huddlestone were certainly not malicious. It was a stupid reaction to being barged, but I can appreciate it wasn't right. And this is the same Joey Barton that lost the plot against Man City a couple of years ago and got thrown out while playing for QPR. All right, Nicky, how are Tommy's twigs and berries?
Yeah, obviously, I don't know about that. But all I would say is that, you know, he's probably gone and watched the Vinnie Jones DVD of, how to get cheap shots in, which is out there somewhere. I feel like you could buy it on how to stand on your opponent's toes in cold weather and slap them around the ear. It was just a silly, silly thing. And, it's just
well, Nicky, it's so silly that you've actually developed an echo, which is quite amazing. Kartik, does the FA, because I'm thinking on this one, the FA might seriously chuck the book at Barton, because they must be getting sick and tired of him. And it won't be just three matches. It could be longer.
Yeah, you know, I used to make excuses for him 6 or 7 seasons ago. He was with us for a while, Joey Barton. He's a Scouser. He grew up an Everton supporter, but he came through our system. And I used to make excuses. I made an excuse when he put a cigar out in a guy's eyes. I made an excuse when he mooned the crowd at Goodison after we equalized late in that match. I made an excuse when he attacked Osman Dabo in training. That was the last action he had as a City player. He was shipped off to Newcastle after that. But it's just a recurring pattern with this guy. I mean, I don't understand at what point does a footballer mature in their life. He's in his 30s now. He's the captain of that club. He's made all this money, all the issues, psychological issues that I made excuses for him about when he was younger, when he was at Manchester City. They shouldn't exist anymore. I mean, he's gotten fame and fortune. I just don't get it. Yeah, Nick, I think the FA is going to throw the book at him. This is repeat offender. This is like a 10-time repeat offender. This is not just a guy who's done it once before. You know, you hear this adage, oh, he's not that sort of player. I think with Joey Barton, we expect this. This is something we all, when we saw it with Barton yesterday, we were like, ah, yeah, okay, here we go again.
Nate, back to the football. QPR doing remarkably well to come back with 10 players through Charlie Austin and then giving up the late, late winner, which must be a right kick in the teeth for Hull City. 2 wins on the trot has got them out of the relegation zone, and QPR now flirting with Burnley, as you mentioned so astutely earlier in the pod on goal difference. Just a monster result for Hull.
A monster result for the Tigers. That's right, those soccer Tigers from back in 1904. No, you got to love it, man. No one expected this. No one gave the manager with the biggest head in the history of English football any chance to get this team out of the relegation zone. And he's not only done it, they're 4 points clear right now. They got momentum on their side. We talk all about luck and fortuitous bounces. I mean, this is a fortuitous sack tap, because this was a relatively evenly played match. I thought Hull were the better team on the day, but, I mean, they got to play a man up as a result of this psychopath losing it yet again. And so, hey, maybe even luck's on their side right now, finally, after everything that the Orange and Black have been through here this season. I see good things happening for them, trending in the right direction, as our old friend, Statman, David Mossy.
Statman. Welcome. This is the World Soccer Talk podcast. Catch us on Twitter at World Soccer Talk, hashtag WSTPod. Subscribe via Stitcher, TuneIn, and iTunes. And I would be remiss to mention Soccer Morning, which is a brand new pod that appears Monday through Friday on this very same channel. Interviews with prominent journalists, players, coaches, in addition to taking live listener calls. And I'm sure Nate Aburrea will be making an appearance on this show pretty soon. He has no soul. The popular show provides an American perspective on soccer's major discussion points, as well as an emphasis on Major League Soccer and the U.S. men's and women's teams and developments in the U.S. soccer world, as well as world soccer. Hosted by Jason Davis, listeners can hear the show live Monday through Friday from 10 to 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time at worldsoccertalk.com/live. Let's take it now to a very, very happy, our boss, Christopher Harris, Liberty Stadium, Swansea City 2, Manchester United 1. Get in there. 20,809 on hand. Herrera opens up the scoring for United. Song Yong-ki in the 30th minute, and then Gomez, ably assisted by Jonjo Shelvey, giving the Swans the winner. This one, a huge result in the race for Champions League football, due to the fact that this result now has money implications. We have to start with Kartik. How devastating would it be for Manchester United not to make the Champions League? And when you think about the 3 points, let's call it 3 points dropped, that would have been enough to put them in third place, 2 points clear of Arsenal. Instead, they're now only a point ahead of Southampton, 3 ahead of Tottenham, and just 5 ahead of Liverpool.
I think they're only 2 ahead of Liverpool, actually.
Sorry, yes, 2 ahead of Liverpool. My bad.
Thank you, Cardiff.
Thank you, yes.
With a match, they have to still go to Anfield, correct? So that's this is a devastating result. At what point do we begin chalking this up as Swansea being a bogey team for Manchester United? This is 3 or 4 on the trot they've lost to them. They seem to have their number, but this was again a manageable game. Van Gaal had his full team for the first time in a long time. And they got the early lead, and they were undone. A great goal by Key to get them back to 1-1. And then maybe the fortunate goal, Shelvey, I think it took a deflection somewhere in there to give Swansea the victory. But we saw once again United not able to hold the lead, not able to really play a complete match away from home. They've gotten some results in matches where they played very poorly away from home. They're just not very good away from Old Trafford. A lack of continuity in tactics from Van Gaal. Contrast that to Brendan Rodgers, who somehow has made his three at the back stick and work. And Liverpool is on this fantastic run now. At the same time as the three at the back have to be abandoned by Van Gaal, maybe it's a personnel issue, but he's mixing his tactics, he's mixing his squads, and there just seems to be something wrong. If they miss the top four guys, Nick, that was, I know, the initial question, they are in a load of trouble financially. They were able to miss it once. That was the talk, was, okay, if they miss it once, they'll be okay. But if they miss it twice, then they're in trouble. The team is built on that. They've spent so much money this year in the transfer market, outspent everybody in England, maybe outspent everybody in Europe other than Real Madrid. And I think they're in trouble. I don't know that they finish in the top four at this point.
I gotta pose this to every United fan out on the Twitter sphere, and hit us up at World Soccer Talk, at Nate WST. I mean, Cardiff nails it there. They got to get away with it once, only David Moyes got his throat slit after one time of this, and this doesn't perform. At what point, United Nation, and I know 99% of you are from outside of England, so United World supporters, at what point do you start putting the manager under a little bit more scrutiny, and especially in comparison to the insane level of scrutiny that you put David Moyes under last year? At what point does LVG start getting held accountable here in a game that, as Cardick and Nick have both labeled this, a manageable game? So maybe the manager could have actually done a little better himself. At what point does LVG start getting a little bit more blame thrown his way?
Well, the manager right now is moving Wayne Rooney around like a wasp on speed. He's in midfield. He's dropping back to DM. He's out on the left. He's out on the right. Nicky Hollander, we all love Wayne Rooney because we're England supporters, England fans at the end of the day. But Wayne Rooney for Manchester United just seems like a schizophrenic character right now because he doesn't know where he's playing. Van Gaal's got to say at one point, this is what you are, Wayne, correct?
Absolutely. It's so hard as a player to, like, 1 minute be playing on the right wing, the next minute to be playing as, like you said, defensive midfield, you know, attacking midfield, in the hole, center forward, because your game is based on things coming to you and being very instinctive. And every time you move around, there's different skill sets and different things that you have to do. Like, up front, it's about protecting the ball and it's about, you know, getting your other teammates involved. Out on the wing, it's about getting, you know, moving the ball quickly. And so it's so many different things. And Man United, to me, just look like a collection of very good players who have no continuity and no real philosophy and style of playing. And like I said to you last week, they are going to start falling down the league. I think they are the ones who finish maybe sixth or the back of all of these guys, you know, behind Liverpool, behind Spurs, behind Southampton. I just can't see them in the last 13 games, figuring out their philosophy and actually being able to, like, make a drive to the end. I think they're the ones that are going to miss out.
Outstanding observation, Mr. Nicky Hollander. Finish this up, went up with Kartik. Kartik, we said that Swansea were going to disappear once they'd got rid of Winifred Boney for that ridiculous amount of cash to your horrible lot. They're actually not doing too badly without him.
Yeah, they're in this mid-table funk also that you described for Stoke. Every season, Stoke hasn't been in a legit relegation fight since they came up 7 seasons ago. They've never made it to Europe. Well, they made it to Europe 1 year. But Swansea, kind of the same sort of thing. They won a cup, so they made it to Europe 1 season. But they seem to be in this mid-table mire. And even if they sell their best players, and this isn't the first time they've sold guys. They sold Joe Allen. We thought that was going to hurt them. Really didn't. They sold Scott Sinclair. We thought that was going to hurt them. It really didn't. Now they've sold Boney. We thought that was going to hurt them. It really hasn't. They're just a good mid-table Premier League club, and that's a great place to be for a club that about 12 years ago almost fell out of the Football League and probably would have gone out of business if they had fallen to the conference.
Sunderland versus West Brom. There's nothing really to report from this game. I'll tell you what happened. It was 0-0. Sebastian Larsson had a shot in about the 43rd minute, and that about sums it up. So there's your take on Sunderland-West Brom, which leaves us with the last match of the weekend. We saved the best to the last. A five-star performance by those mercenaries at Manchester City. Etihad Stadium, the venue, 45,602 on hand to watch an absolute drubbing of Newcastle United and John Carver, who are initially looked like a likely candidate to perhaps succeed at Newcastle. Well, he's just getting lambasted because Newcastle don't have a clue. Sergio Aguero, second minute. Nasri, 12th minute. Dzeko in the 21st minute to kill the game off. And then David Silva showing just how silky and smooth he is in the 51st and 53rd minutes. Nate Aboraya, Manchester City now only 5 points behind Chelsea. And they've got him back. Oh, isn't it sickening?
That's right.
Toure returns, City return. Don't tell me it's all about Yaya Toure, please.
Don't tell me I told you so. I mean, I get lucky on this one. I mean, I made the whole rant last week about the importance of Yaya Toure and the true most valuable player, in my opinion, in the entire Premier League. Obviously, there were a million other things going right for Man City on this day. It seemed like it was a day where nothing
playing
could
Newcastle,
go wrong.
Playing Newcastle, one of them, right?
Playing Newcastle, one of them, getting a goal, I mean, less than 2 minutes into the match. I mean, there were so many things going perfect for them. But within all that was, yeah, the return of the spine and the force of a team, of a title holder. And how many times, I mean, we flip-flop like fishes out of water this season when it comes to this 1-2. And here we are again, said, oh, and Chelsea with this big drop to Burnley, and here's Man City only five back. I mean, look, I'm still picking Chelsea to win the league, but hey, as a fan of this league and as someone who contributes to talk shows that depend on competition, I'm hoping that City can play the kind of football that they've played here in the remainder of the season, except for their next match, which is, of course, against Liverpool. I'm hoping they will not play that well then. My summing up of this match, I love it. I always thought, as a Liverpool supporter, I had to deal with Rafa Benitez, who famously would never smile. Liverpool could be up 8-0, and Rafa would never smile. I love the Twitter reply from our good friend Kartik Krishnayer. I said, man, is my favorite citizen happy today? And he goes, no. If it were against Sunderland, I would have been happy. Not pleased with this. We always do this against Newcastle. Kartik, talk about perfection.
We do.
Demanding more from Man City. I love
it. Opponent, even if it had been against a championship club, let's say it had been against Huddersfield, I would have been impressed. We always do this to Newcastle. Newcastle are, we talk about this every week, guys, but there's just something about that club that lends them to underachieve on the big stage. And every time they come to the Etihad, you can look it up, there's a pasting. I mean, it's 3-0, 4-0, 5-0, game's over within 10 minutes. A good performance from City, no doubt, and I agree with you about Yaya Toure. City's record over the course of the three seasons where he's been with the club and had to go to the Cup of African Nations speaks for itself, how poor the record's been. But, gosh, Newcastle again, I don't know. I guess this is going to be standard operating procedure. And what does Mike Cashley care? Yes, I said Cashley. What does Mike Cashley care? He is counting his pounds. He's counting his squid and doing quite well.
Okay, we're going to have to go to Nicky because I'm sure he's going to like name drop. But you, I know you're good mates with Solomon. What does he say about Yaya?
Yaya, I think they call him the general. I mean, that guy is like, he's a great player. Now, he doesn't play that well and he didn't play that well for Ivory Coast in the African Cup of Nations. But why he's so crucial to Man City is because, you know, what he does is he allows everybody around him to have freedom in their game, knowing that his number one priority is to just be the anchor in the middle, that basically that sink plug, which will suck everything into it and not allow anything to get by him. And it just frees up the whole team to have a completely different way of playing. That he contributes to a couple of amazing goals and, you know, lung-busting runs all the way down the field is another thing. But his main thing is he allows that whole team to play with an air of freedom. And you can see what happens when they do it.
Let's put a bow on this weekend. Obviously, another crazy week in the Premier League. You know, just when you think you've seen everything, something else comes along that makes you go, wow, what a great league this is. Chelsea, you know, they're still leading the pack by 5 points. City have reeled them in. And at the bottom of the table, it looks like that's going to be a dogfight deluxe as well. Kartik, sum up this weekend for us, please.
I think we had Jose Mourinho's rant, which we love as observers. This is why we missed him when he was out of English football. This was the pleasure of the Italian fans and the Spanish fans while he was gone. But I think the real takeaway from this weekend, again, is Manchester United dropping points away from home, not putting in a performance, not looking consistent, not utilizing Wayne Rooney to the best of his abilities. They, I agree with Nicky Hollander, will probably finish outside the top four, even though player for player, they should be up there with the top two, and player and based on their cash outlay, they should be out there up there with Chelsea and Man City.
Something that could shake the foundations of the Premier League and certainly will shake the foundations at Old Trafford. Nicky Hollander.
I will sum it up like this. Spurs have got 16 points from losing positions. Never sleep on your fitness, my friends.
Ooh, I like it, Mr. Nicky Hollander. And where can people visit you at your website where you specialize in personal training?
NickyHollander.com, Twitter, Nicky Hollander, and every other social media outlet, Nicky Hollander.
Mr. Nate Aburea.
Liverpool closing in 2 points off of that team that everyone else seems to think is falling fast, that Manchester United lot. They just defeated Southampton 2-0. They're 1 point behind them. Talk about closing in from just the depths of mediocrity just about 2 months ago to where they are. It's absolutely incredible, and I see it continuing. Big clashes coming up with Besiktas and Istanbul and Man City nearing in as well. Big credit to some of the Twitter supporters of this show, again, at World Soccer Talk, at Nate WST. They got the hashtag victimization complex going again with Jose Mourinho. I very, very much appreciated that for all of you out there who got that hashtag going on Twitter. And look, we love the special one. I don't know what we do without him. 30, 33, 43, 69. It sounded like he was reading lottery numbers. I love it. Keep it coming. Don't ever leave English football, because we all love to hate you and you are pure entertainment. Don't ever leave the Premier League, Jose.
Jose Mourinho, pure box office. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to agree with Nate about a certain Liverpool. They are the informed team, but they are also joined by Arsenal. Keep your eye on these two teams in red. They are going to have a major say in where the Premier League trophy ends up and certainly where the FA Cup ends up this year. Thank you so much for joining us. For Kartik Karashnaya, Nicky Hollander, Nate Aburea, I am Nick Webster. You can find me on Twitter at Nick Webster, and you can find us on Stitcher, TuneIn, and iTunes. We will talk very soon. This has been the World Soccer Talk podcast. Bye for now. Come on, you Irons.
It doesn't make sense, come on, you Irons. Coys is the only one that makes sense.